Welcome to Level Up. I'm Sherelle.
And I'm Danny. And this is the podcast where we talk about health, fitness, and mindset. The worst advice we have ever received.
That's so punchy, doesn't it?
I know. Today we're talking about just that unsolicited advice that we just get on every facet of life, whether it be training, your marriage status, you know, what you're doing with business. Are you really going to eat that? You know, people just love putting their two cents into other people's life. And we know that it comes from a good place a lot of the time. But sometimes that advice is just so bad. And you reflect and say, if I actually took that advice, that could detrimentally change my life path and end up putting me in a place where I would just not be happy. So we're going to reflect on just some of the key pieces of really bad advice that we've received over our lifetime.
Yeah, this was fun to put notes together because, as Danny said, people just love giving you like advice that they would want or advice that might be relevant to them. But advice isn't universal, right? Like the right advice to the wrong person is still the wrong advice. And we were reflecting back on like some of the pieces of advice that we've been given, like if we took them on, what we would have done, where we would have been, like health, fitness, nutrition, business, coaching, like so many different things. So for today, we're actually going to go through some of those different areas and share some bits of advice or feedback or even just like, I guess, things that people think are right. If we had done them, like some of the consequences of doing so. And I'm sure like everyone listening to this somewhere along the line, you've probably been given some of this advice as well.
Let's get into it. So do you want to kick us off? We'll start with nutrition, bad nutrition advice. Look, there's so many. Obviously, we just picked one or two each.
Yes.
So let's have a look.
Yeah. Well, when I was thinking about bad nutrition advice, as you said, like there is so much out there, it was hard for me to try and condense it to what would be relevant. So I chose something that I feel like a lot of people probably still do, or advice that people still take, and that is with my fitness pal. So I'm sorry to break it to you guys, but when it comes to the calculations that that app spits out, they are so incorrect. And I can't fathom why a company like that's owned by like Under Armour with probably like billions of dollars is still telling me as a female to eat 1300 calories. And I actually double checked this the other day to make sure I was right. But I popped in my calculations that if I was a female, 64 kilos, my height, that wants to lose body fat at a conservative rate, I should be eating 1300 calories. Or to be exact, 1,360. And to me, like that's actually lower than my BMR or my coma calories. And it's just incredibly low. So that is a good example of advice, I guess, given by technology. But then also coaches, doctors, people, like anyone that you think you can trust or like professionals as well. It's not always the best advice, right? Because that to me just seems wild. And maybe it's out of context because I don't know, like for me, I don't know, but like, don't you think that's incredibly low?
Yeah, very. And then I know people would still shave off some calories from that as well. Cause it's like, oh, you know, I'll just push a little bit harder and just take a little bit more off. So that app and then also the calorie calculators, I feel like they're all based on the same like algorithm or whatever formula that they're using. So 100% that,
Do you know what I found really interesting though? The macros that it spat out to me were 68 grams of protein, 170 grams of carbs, and 45 grams of fat.
Wow.
Especially the 68 grams of protein. Yeah. That to me, I'm like, that's incredibly low. I think I would eat that in like a meal and a snack.
Yeah, like, that's literally like two meals.
Like, yeah, again, I just think that there's a difference between health and fitness. And I don't even know if I'd put this under health, but like in terms of fitness, like if your goals are like body composition, building strength, building muscle, not being unhealthy, you should be eating like a good amount of protein, like protein at every meal. And no, you don't have to eat like 200 grams, but you know, 1.6, 1.8 per gram, per kilogram body weight. And this was just like, it was so off, right? And I see this a lot with clients that come to us that they're like, oh yeah, I've been eating what the app told me to eat. Like a lot of people still do that, and fair enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like fair enough. And I'm like, oh, it's just, I don't know why they're so behind, but no, it's definitely like misleading advice, and I would never recommend someone follow the calculations on MyFitnessPal. And even for anyone out there, like, I actually find a formula that I do like is the Harris-Benedict formula for calculating energy balance. It seems to be a lot more accurate or in line with the calculations that we would naturally make as coaches. And sometimes that's a really good place to start if you're trying to figure it out. And then just enter them in to MyFitnessPal or whatever tracking your app you're using, rather than letting that app decide how much you should eat.
Absolutely. And that's such a good segue into my first piece of poor advice, which is protein being bad for your kidneys. Oh. And I think I went down the path of talking to more Gen Pop with this. Still having a lot of conversations with even family members who aren't in our industry. You know, they still think, oh, but too much protein powder is going to be bad for my kidneys and things like that. So they may see that 68 grams of protein and go, oh, yeah, that's enough because I don't have too much because my kidneys will shut down. But that's been disproven. That's actually just a myth. Unless you have a pre-existing kidney condition, okay, cool, then you need to see a specialist around levels of food that you're taking in. Yeah, but that's just a minority and it's not going to catch you off guard. You'll know if you have a kidney issue. Mm. But for everyone else, protein is the main building blocks of our muscles and our cells. Like, we need protein. So you said, you know, 1.6 grams minimum per kilo of body weight, we need to be getting that protein in. So I think the theory comes from when protein is metabolized, there's waste products, just like when we metabolize any food, and that gets filtered through your kidneys. So again, like, that's what we're made to do. It's not bad. And I think the benefits of protein just outweigh that so much that it's just something we don't need to worry about, because we should be aiming to have around 30 grams of protein per meal. And we've been doing it for years and years. And, you know, I became my healthiest when I started upping my protein. You feel fuller for longer, you build more muscle, you know, you can think clearly. You don't want to snack on things as much because you have had a satiating meal filled with protein. Yep. So it's definitely a myth, but it does go around still. Mm.
Is that advice that you've been given or is that advice that you've seen?
Oh, yeah. So I went to a GP ages ago before I became educated and confident enough to not really listen to GP's advice. And then I was telling them, I think they did ask about my diet. It was a family doctor, which, whatever, it is what it is. But he's like, you know, oh, don't, because I said, he looked at me, I looked quite sporty. This is when I was playing tennis, so still quite thin and lean and whatever. And I said, oh, you know, I've started at the gym. I was nearly 18. You know, I've started at the gym. I'm going to do some weight training. I've started with some protein powder. Oh, be careful. Protein's really bad for your kidneys, you know. And
really?
I went to the dentist and he said the same thing. Obviously, I didn't have a checkup.
Your dentist told you that protein's bad for your kidneys.
Because we started looking at my teeth, and I think sometimes protein powder, I don't know. Back then, I was a bit more ignorant with my dental health.
Oh, you're on the way.
And same thing. And he goes, he's like, what do you eat? I go, this. And I rattled off a pretty healthy diet. I thought the dentist would be so impressed. And again, he's like, oh, you got to watch that protein. It's really bad for your kidneys. And I'm like, this, wow, I can't believe this is like common knowledge or what people think is actual knowledge amongst professionals.
Yeah, it's so
ridiculous.
Again, like, health and fitness, like, people use them together, but they're not, right? Like, people in the fitness industry are trained differently to those in the health industry. And I do believe it's because of the model. Like, with the health industry, it's all about public health. So it's like, how do we keep the public healthy on a percentage wise? It's like obesity rates, right? Socioeconomic status. It's like public health. Whereas I feel like a lot of fitness and even like holistic healthcare and anything that's not Western practices, like your Chinese medicine, acupuncture, all those sort of things, I feel like they're more on an individual basis, right? They care about unique health and like what's going to be applicable to you. Whereas healthcare, it's wide scope, right? And they get taught differently. They get taught to prioritize public health, like what's best for the public health, contraception, right? They get taught different principles, and I'm not saying they're right or wrong. It's just a different practice. And of course, like, Western healthcare, and like, we're very fortunate to have what we do. But in saying that, there is that missing gap between like, well, what's relevant for you, and you don't know what you don't know, right? Like, you're never going to question, most people would never question a doctor.
Yeah.
Would never question a doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, they just never would. And I just think, like, I don't blame people. Do you know what I mean? Like 14-year-old me would have never questioned a doctor either. Mm. And if I hadn't had experiences like working in healthcare or even like in the fitness industry, I don't think I would question a doctor either. But it's just one of those stereotypes that people think that, oh, like just because you work in this field, you must know everything. And it's just not the case, especially with fitness. Like they don't get taught any of that stuff. So
nothing to do with nutrition, health, fitness. But then like even eggs being bad for cholesterol. It's just, again, like protein and eggs are my staple every day. Yep. So bringing it back to our topic of if our life trajectory would be so much different if I thought, oh, I can't have protein, I can't have eggs, you know, all of these healthy foods being deemed unhealthy on a global scale. I feel like every human has heard, oh, yeah, can't have too many egg yolks and all of that. But it's just so healthy. Mm. Again, there's a tiny minority that can't eat those foods, but like, okay, they teach us protein's bad and eggs are bad. What's the alternative? Everyone will just give up and go eat a Big Mac.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
Yeah,
I have a bacon and egg McMuffin and chocolate every day, pretty much.
There you go.
Like bacon egg McMuffin's like my go-to breakfast
and protein.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Bacon, protein.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Come on, a little bit of bacon. And I think with nutrition, you could almost find something wrong with every single food. It doesn't matter if it's kale, it doesn't matter if it's bacon, it doesn't matter if it's oats, bread, meat. Like you could find someone on the internet talking down about that. And then it's like, well, what's left to eat? Like it's nothing left. I may as well just like, yeah, eat air and just starve. And then there's a problem with that too. Oh, right. Yeah. So there's always going to be something wrong with anything when it comes to nutrition. And again, it probably is bad for someone, but it might not be bad for you. Like unless you've got an allergy to something or an intolerance to something, there's nothing that you shouldn't eat, right? And I think a lot of people have, I guess, like the whole processed food argument. It's like processed food's bad. It's like, well, like protein powder's a processed food. Bread's a processed food. Milk's processed technically. Like tell me something in this day and age that really isn't processed. And how many people can really go out and whip up this nice garden and pick their own corn? Like who can do that these days? I'm sorry, but like there's bigger problems when it comes to health in fighting. It's like we just want to get people moving their bodies, right? And if they want to eat like a bacon and egg McMuffin for breakfast, like that's not the worst thing they could be putting in their body. Trust me.
Exactly. There's way worse. So I'm just sick of the stereotypical foods that are bad actually being really good and beneficial for you. Like, but yeah, that's
like fat, right? Like it's like the whole thing around fat, as you're saying with cholesterol. It's like butter used to be demonized. And now what's the bad guy? Margarine.
Yeah. It's like the alternative.
Exactly. So my concept with nutrition is always like going to be around like whole foods and eating like the least processed foods that you can. But in the same way, I feel like our grandparents had it good, right? Where they would bake their own bread, they would like cook their own cookies, like they'd do that stuff and they'd use like full fat butter and milk and like all those normal things rather than like all these artificial sweeteners or like just protein powder in everything, right? And just it's like it's okay to have a piece of bread.
Yeah.
Right? Like you don't need the low carb bread. Like it's okay to have a piece of bread, like everything in moderation. But I feel like so many people are trying to take the health thing a bit too far with food sometimes and I just don't know if that's better.
I don't think it is at all and it causes a lot more stress around things, you know. Mm. Just focus on the whole foods where you can. And then if you do have a little bit of processed food or trans fats, saturated fats, it's not the end of the world.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not that complicated. That's what I'm trying to get at.
It's not that complicated.
Yes. Next.
Lifestyle and habits. Well, the one that come up for me when it comes to bad advice with lifestyle is the concept around balance. So the amount of people in my life that have said, oh, like, you've just got to find the balance. And just like find that rest and play. And I understand, I get it. Huh?
It's always in that voice, isn't it?
Oh, like I just, it's that nurturing, like I care for you voice, which we love. But I just feel like with a lot of things, whenever I've had to work really hard to achieve anything, I've had to become really unbalanced in certain areas of my life. And it's only ever in hindsight served me quite well. Like to be honest, it's not for everyone, like to push the extreme on opposite ends, but sometimes finding balance is not the answer. Like sometimes you have to be okay with becoming unbalanced in areas of your life if you want to achieve something. Because to be honest, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And if you could remain balanced, then everyone would have what you're after because not many people want to do that work, and that's totally okay. And I got absolutely slaughtered on the internet the other day for talking about work ethic, but sometimes things have to be sacrificed. Sometimes you have to make choices that other people don't want to get what others can't, right? That to me just seems like such an obvious statement around, like, if you want what other people don't have, you have to be willing to do what others won't, right? Like, that to me is just, like, in history, it's just what we have to do. And I think for me, people always say it from a place of love when they feel like you might be pushing it to the extreme or working too much, or even the opposite, right? Where maybe people are partying too hard and, you know, you've got people that are like, you know, maybe let's just swing it back the other way. Always said with good intention, but I actually don't think it's really good advice. Like, I think when someone's trying to push an extreme on something, given that obviously their physical and mental health is in the right place, being unbalanced is expected for periods of your life, for seasons of your life. And the other point I wanted to make on this is, if you look at a lot of really successful people that preach balance, they have had years, if not decades, of being unbalanced in other areas of their life. And they've had to go through extremes where, you know, they were in a lot of debt, or where they were really unhealthy, or where they didn't prioritize their relationships, you know, or they had no money. You know, they worked 70 hours a week. Like, they did go through seasons of that to be able to live the lifestyle that they have now. And then these same people get on the internet and say that, you know, you need to, you do your 10-step morning routine and meditate every day and, you know, work 4-hour weeks. And it's like, no, like, that's not what you did to get there. You know, and sometimes you have to overexert yourself to get something. And then when you pull back, you maintain a higher threshold. And I think this concept around balance, it's really coming back in trend a little bit more, where, like, people want more, you know, work-life balance and all those things, and that's okay. But I just, for me, that advice wouldn't have served me if I took it in the past.
Have you ever tried to listen to that advice and force yourself to try to have balance, or you just thought, nah, I'm not listening to you?
In short periods, I feel like I have, but I actually feel like it's given me more anxiety than than the opposite, because I'll be like, oh, okay, have my day off, relax.
Literally.
Just like watching work accumulate. So I don't think so. Like, I've definitely had seasons where I've pulled back, but yeah, maybe I should lean into it a little bit more, but I don't think so. Like, it hasn't served me when I've done it in micro doses. So I can't see how extending it to a year or two would actually be more beneficial.
Exactly.
Like, I know that in the future I'll have that time, you know, and I will be able to pull back and do whatever I want in certain areas and prioritize other areas and vice versa. And I've had that in, actually I must reframe. I've definitely had that in other areas, like when I was at uni, like, you know, when I, like, I used to travel a lot, you know, like, I've definitely had that. And I just think the extreme just shifted the other way though, and that also served me well.
Yeah, exactly. But it is interesting because people do love commenting on it. I feel like our lessons are quite interlinked. I didn't read yours when I was writing mine as well.
No, neither.
It's just interesting that just people who are trying to help you have the same opinion when they notice things, such as, you know, really high work ethic, high success levels, high levels of achievement, or if they do notice that we might be running ourselves into the ground a little bit. Bit different if your mental health is suffering and you're really just coming from a place of, oh, I have to do this, and running away from something towards your goals. But if your goals are pulling you because you get to be creative, you get to challenge yourself, you know, you meet new people, all of the amazing things that goal achievement can bring, why would we want to slow that down? It's such an amazing feeling to feel like you're going full steam ahead at something that you love and enjoy. But I always hear it, and even Paul, when are you guys going to go on holidays? Come on, you've just done this. When are you going to go on holidays?
Get married.
Oh, yeah, that's coming next. That's definitely next. But no, as in the topic, not the marriage.
Yeah.
That's another one. But even we just renovated the gym, and it was one of the happiest times that we've had in a very long time, because a very big goal that we achieved. And yes, we were tired. Yes, we were at the gym for all crazy hours. We were dusty moving things, but we absolutely loved it, you know. And people's first reaction, of course, congratulations, looks great, blah, blah, blah. When are you going to go away now? Surely you have to go away now. I go, why would I want to leave something that we just built that has been years in the making and then go sit on a beach somewhere and not get to enjoy it? Or why would I just pull the handbrake up so so sharply and just, you know, put everything at a standstill when we've got such amazing momentum. Mm. And if I were to sit on the beach directly after a big goal, that would give me hectic anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking like go to Greece, like, because I always rebut the conversation with, yeah, but I travel to Melbourne every month, you know, I hang out with Sherelle and my friends and my family. I go to Queensland often. They're like, no, a real holiday. So for some reason, it's just their lens on what a real holiday is, which is 2 weeks in an overseas country completely switching off.
Drinking cocktails.
I couldn't think of anything worse, to be honest, but it comes up all the time. Mm. Worst advice.
Do you know why I think it happens?
Why?
I think that people brush off their own expectations onto you. So they couldn't fathom doing that. So they go, oh, why would you want to do that? I don't know what it is. Is it gaslighting? I don't know what it's called. But
tall poppy syndrome or not?
I don't know what it is. But I feel like people say, oh, you must be due for a break now, because they couldn't imagine them working for that long and not having a holiday. Or are you going to get married soon? Because they couldn't imagine being in their 30s, not be engaged if they'd been with a partner for so long. It's like, you know, people will usually say those things. They don't know it. And it's never, I don't think it's conscious, but they can't fathom, and they don't want you to do that. Like maybe it is tall poppy. You know, it's a mirror.
It's like pulling you back.
It's a mirror. Like them looking at you doing that is like a mirror of them not doing it. So they're almost going to be like, oh, well, don't do that.
Yeah.
Come over here with peer pressure. Come over and do this. Have a holiday. Oh, that makes me feel better. You having a break makes me feel better.
Yes.
You're like, I don't know.
Because then you're not, oh, yeah, that's right. That's true.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just thinking of it as like, I was just wondering why people do it.
And you know who it is? It's always people that I do not envy. And I do not, I would not trade places with them. I've never had someone that I look up to and go, wow, they're amazing, living their best life, blah, blah, blah. They're never the ones that have an opinion on my life. It's always the ones that I look at and go, damn, I feel sorry for you. Like, you do not have your shit together.
Yeah. Well, like I said, like, I just think that when you're doing your own thing, like, I'm not telling people to have a break. Like, they're a big person. They can make their own decisions with their life. Do you know what I mean? Like, one, I just don't care, like, in terms of, like, that's not my place. Like, I'm not – if someone asks for feedback, like, then I'll give it. But in terms of, like, me just sharing my biased opinion, like, that, like, you don't want it. I'm not telling you to have a holiday. Like, or maybe I'll invite you on one. But, yeah, I just feel like you never take advice from someone that you wouldn't want to swap spots with.
Yes.
You know, that's the piece. It's like, okay, if you've done the thing, or if you've been to a place, or if you can foresee something that's coming that maybe I should know about, like, that comes from a different place, doesn't it? Where it's like a genuine, hey, like, I really care about you. Like, make sure you watch out for this thing. Like, that's very different to, like, oh, just have a break.
Yeah.
It's a very different tone, and again, like, it's that mirror them mirroring back what they want you to do rather than like what they, because from a place of care. But yeah, it's so interesting, because even when you think of all the advice that we're going to be speaking about, like the places it comes from is questionable.
It's more triggering because you can sense the tone. If it was like, if you gently came up to me and you saw that I was overworked or whatever, and you're like, oh, Danny, how's it been going?
Yep.
Have you thought of having a little holiday or a getaway? Have you guys got anything planned? Like, I'd receive that so well, but it's just the tone that it comes out
it's
in.
The unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't ask for it. I'm actually really happy about this.
And it comes when I'm at my happiest. Yeah. I notice the advice comes when I'm at my happiest. It's so interesting.
Maybe it is the mirror effect.
It must be. How do we get rid of these people?
No more advice.
I'm not naming names.
Nah. It's interesting. Anyways, moving on. That was a good one. Was that the same as yours? So I had the finding the balance piece. Was that the same as yours?
Well, I've got written down, you need to go on holiday.
Yes.
But then I did have another one. Or do you have another one for this?
Go.
And it kind of contradicts what I just said in a sense, like, because I have micro holidays in the day, you know, morning routine.
Yeah.
If I want a Wednesday off, I just have a low-key Wednesday. You know, they're my micro holidays throughout the week. And that sustains me to not go on a big overseas trip every year. But then I got advice once from someone when I just moved to the beach. And I was so happy with myself because I finally moved out of home, you know, and I just was so proud of myself for moving near the beach, still in Melbourne. And then I posted my new morning routine, which was waking up a bit earlier to allow a nice walk. Mm-hmm. And then that person goes, you know, who was trying to mentor me at the time, still gave me some good advice in other areas, but this advice was trash. Like, why are you spending the mornings walking on the beach? You should be working at those times.
Oh, and do I know this person?
I can't. I'm not going to say too much. And this probably, this is not going to be turned into a snippet. I don't want this one on Instagram because they know who they are.
That's fair.
And that's why I prefaced by saying they gave me amazing advice in other areas. But this piece of advice was trash. Like, yeah, just
why?
Seeing me again, so happy in my new location on the beach. Yeah. Beautiful, quick morning walk, half an hour with a coffee, smiling on my Instagram, saying how proud I was of myself, whatever. You should be working now. Why are you waking up going to the beach? Like, the morning's a work hour.
Again, is it mirroring what they're doing? Like,
the more we dissect this.
I wish that I could do that. No, I have to be at work.
Mm.
Isn't it? I can't unsay this now.
Why am I getting angry?
why do you, like, if you had followed that advice... what would have happened?
Yeah, good question. I mean, a morning routine in one way or another is important for everyone. I can understand some people wake up and go straight to emails, straight to social media, have a coffee. That's
guilty
fine.
Of all three.
And that's totally fine, but that's your morning routine.
Yeah, that's true.
No one has the right to infiltrate that because you're an adult, I'm an adult. We can decide what we do in our mornings.
Yep.
For me, I choose, and I still do this now, to get up and walk. You know, when it's not raining. So when the weather's good, I get up and walk, local cafe, grab a coffee, mm-hmm. come and start my day. It clears my mind. I don't get lost amongst, you know, the hustle and bustle of the day and all the messages. So that's just my routine that I find works. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it gets longer or shorter as needed. But mm-hmm. I feel as though no one has the right to tell you what to do with your morning routines or any hour of your day.
Mm.
That's what annoys me. So it was more just the fact of me showing myself doing something that made me happy and feel good, and then other people still coming in saying, no, you should be doing the polar opposite.
Yeah,
it's like if you posted yourself doing your routine, which is the opposite to mine, it's fine, but then me saying, no, you should be walking, it's like you don't have the right to tell me what to do with my morning.
It always comes down to the intent, doesn't it? It's sort of like, what benefit is that actually going to serve me? Again, does it come from a place of care, or is it just mirroring and projecting what you think I should be doing based on how you live your life?
Mm.
More often than not, it's probably the latter, right? And I think that this is emotional intelligence, right? It's just, you've got to question, like, the people that give you advice, like, where the intent is coming from.
Yeah.
And also, like, if you're asking for advice, like, the most triggering pieces of advice that I get are the ones I don't ask for. Because I'm like, I actually don't want your opinion. Like, I'm quite happy doing this the way I want to do it. So it blows my mind, because sometimes I think I would never say that to someone. You know, like, I would never share my opinion to someone that truly hadn't asked it. This is why, like, it blows my mind where people take, like, you know, half an hour out of their day to leave, like, 150 character comment on someone's post. It's like, wow, you care that much. Like, are you okay? I almost feel bad for those people, because you're like, wow, you mustn't have real problems.
Exactly.
That's what I think. It's like, if you've got time to worry about that, and you click on it, it's like they don't even follow you, or like you said, it's like these people, you haven't spoken to them in a month. It's sort of like, it's just so interesting as to why people give that advice, like why people feel it's necessary.
It's probably a control thing too. They want to try and control what you're doing. Depends who it's coming from.
Mm.
Depends how close that person is.
Mm.
Yeah, because you've got on one scale, you know, friends, family, loved ones versus complete on the opposite, internet trolls you've never met. Sometimes they are trying to say the same thing, but it's received differently.
Yeah. Like, on the opposite end of that, right, like, so obviously that was the worst, like, bad advice. Have you, like, you mentioned that this person had given you good advice, like, in that aspect when it comes to lifestyle and routine. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Oh, it wasn't to do with lifestyle and routine. It was just advice for work and business.
Right. Yeah,
so the things that they were the most passionate about, they gave great advice on.
Yeah.
But then the lifestyle piece was the opposite.
Isn't that interesting, though? Like, some people give great advice, like, but, like, you know how you
their
go
lens.
To certain people for, like, certain things?
Exactly.
And I'm like, well, I'm just not going to ask this person on that advice. You know, like, I'm not going to ask my hairdresser for cooking advice. Or, like, you know, I'm not going to ask my mechanic about, like, my health. You know, you're not going to ask certain people about certain things, but sometimes they'll still give you advice.
Yeah. And it's important to even just section your friendships and every relationship in your life and recognize that person's for that. Yep. I can go deep with that person. That person's just going to talk about themselves for half an hour. I just got to cop that, yeah. You know. We have to just section everyone in our lives and try and block out the noise, but it still comes in.
Yeah.
It still comes
whether
in.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Moving on, coaching advice. I thought this one would be fun because obviously Danny and I coach ourselves and we've had coaching experiences in the past and I've been given some doozies. I know I've had probably more experiences of like not so positive coaching experiences than you, Danny.
Yeah.
So you're like, what do you mean? I was like, oh, I've got some doozies. So I won't ever name drop. But like, what am I? I'm 30. So like, when did we start competing? How old were we?
2016 or the end of 2016.
Yeah,
so
a long time ago now.
8 years ago.
Wow. Like coaching itself has evolved so much. Not only like the practice of online coaching, but even the knowledge and the accessibility of good information that we have, coaching platforms, coaching practices, particularly in the competing world. Like if you remember when we first started, what the methodologies and practices were, they were pretty horrendous. Yeah. And they wouldn't even fly now. Do you know what I mean?
No way.
So I say this from, I guess, a place of like understanding that like things have evolved a lot. And some practices that probably Danny and I have done, like they just would never happen. But I think a lot of people in our age group, they've probably done a lot of the things that everyone had to learn the hard way. But for me, like just a couple off the top of my head that were practices that I definitely got into. I don't even want to name them, but I got right into the apple cider vinegar thing. You probably remember on my story. But now they've actually shown that it's bad to drink apple cider vinegar. Like it's
undiluted is bad for your teeth.
Yeah, and your like your esophagus as well.
So because it's so harsh.
Because it's so like acidic, I guess. You know, it's probably not good when you think about it. I had this thought: it's like anything that like burns, like a shot of tequila, like probably not good for your mouth. But the apple cider vinegar side of things, fat burners as well. I was given fat burners, waist trainers,
legal fat burners.
Yeah,
let's just clear that up.
Ashwagandha, I can't even pronounce it.
Even those pills from like the supplement stores that were just like filled with caffeine.
Yeah, or there was a it won't matter, but like ATP, remember that brand how it was really big? Like had a lot of that sort of stuff, which I actually think they got in trouble for anyways.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff. Anyways, they're not doing very good.
Anyway. but we won't name drop.
A lot of like those sort of pills and things back then were still commonly used, right? Whereas most people nowadays know that like, okay, none of that
they're gimmicks.
Yeah, like none of that shit works. Like caffeine, creatine, that's really all we need, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, fat burners, waist trainers. I was in that for a big period of time. I think I remember talking to you about it at one stage. Probably on the podcast.
Probably
telling everyone about it. I've really done it all. I've also, even when it comes to like diets, like I've trialed everything. And I actually don't mind that. I always like using myself as like an experiment, seeing what works. Like I've done keto, I've done really low carb, I've done like carb cycling, all the macro side of things. I've done fasting, I've done a lot of stuff.
Why have you done so much stuff?
I don't know, honestly. When I think about it, I'm like, how old am I? Why have I been doing this for so long? I honestly think through like from competing, right, I think one extreme always prompts the other in me in terms of like the way of thinking. So like, yeah, I don't know. Like you got to do pretty hard stuff in comp prep. Not hard stuff in terms of like anything bad, but mentality wise, right? Like you know what real hunger feels like. So me doing keto for a month was like, oh, this would be fun.
Yeah.
Give it a go. You know, it'd be fine. Same with fasting. I think most of it was unintentional. And actually I was doing it for a period around night duty because just found like, I don't know. So I was just trialing it.
That's fine.
But yeah, like I've definitely not only trialed a lot of that stuff myself, but I've also been told to do it for reasons that I can look back on now and go, not really. Like they were probably as misinformed as I was.
From coaches.
From
told
coaches,
you to do
100%.
This.
Yeah. Shit. Yeah. so bless. But yeah, thank goodness for modern coaching practices. And, you know, I still chat with a lot of clients these days that still believe in a lot of this stuff, to be honest, because you do have quite influential people still wearing waist trainers or like still doing detoxes and stuff like that. Like it's still very popular. It's just that we're probably not in those circles as much anymore, but they are very, very still mainstream. Even a lot of the stuff like where you see workouts and you're like, that's not doing shit.
Yeah.
Like, come on. What? That doesn't even make sense. Do you know what I mean? You go from 100 kilo leg press to some like flying leg, no nothing. Do you know what I mean? Like it makes no sense. But you still see a lot of that stuff, and any misinformation just causes this cascade of event. And most people confuse correlation with causation. They just see like a big set of glutes or like a tiny waist and they go, must be the apple cider vinegar.
Yes.
Rather than like genetics or just a calorie deficit, right? But most people just confuse the two.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying the episode. If you are, make sure that you take a screenshot, upload it to your socials, and don't forget to tag us. What about you, Cole?
That's
you...
good. Mine's not as interesting as yours. I was lucky to have a really great coach.
Yeah, you're good.
You know, but again, I think I got sucked into the social media side of things. We were talking earlier. We didn't have reels when we started. We didn't have stories, so it was just images.
Wow. Yeah. Showing our age, we didn't have Instagram stories.
Literally.
I don't remember when they came out.
Oh, I remember. I was still at one of my jobs and I sat in the car before a PT shift to practice. And I took like 10 takes just to get on there and show my face talking. And it was one of the most nerve-wracking things I ever did.
Cute.
Like Instagram stories. Yeah. But so in terms of my actual training, you know, I was pretty lucky in a sense. Like I got really well looked after and guided well. But then it was more me getting sucked into the promoting of products.
Mm.
So I'd already gotten really lean for my first comp and I looked in shape, you know, was happy with how I was looking for that time. And then I started getting those DMs from companies, you know, when it still was quite rare. And I thought I'd made it. I'm like, you know,
sponsored
the local
athlete.
Yeah, the local supplement store wants me to promote their skinny tea.
Yeah.
So that was one of them. This fat burning cream that you put on your bum, like you rub it underneath. So I was kind of posting about that, which was just, oh, it's so cringe. And then these like red capsules that had a lot of caffeine in it, which and creatine was in it as well, the fat burning pills. So it was just cringe on that level. Like, but it was more just me posting it because the company sent it for free. I would tag them. I thought that was, you know, good.
Yeah.
But it's just so cringe looking back. Mm. That wasn't advice from a coach. But I still went down that rabbit hole to make you feel a bit better.
Did nothing. I tell my clients not to do that.
Don't do it. And don't like accept coaches, sponsorships
we do not
just from anyone.
10% discounts anywhere.
No. No. Yeah. It's cringe now, 8 years later, as we said. But then the one that really didn't sit well, and it got given to me as a compliment because I was in my off season. I think it was start of 2019 or 2018. You should do a powerlifting comp. Mm. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I've done 4 bodybuilding shows. I'm in my off season. Transfer. That's the natural progression, apparently, when people just stop bodybuilding, go in an off season, do a powerlifting comp, and you still see it. Horrible advice because I'm not a powerlifter at all, and I never want to be. I did get roped into it.
Did you do one?
8-week prep.
Yeah.
I didn't do the comp because I started putting on body fat.
Yeah.
Like intentionally though. Like there's nothing wrong with putting on body fat, but then I thought I need to put on body fat to get stronger because I started getting sucked into the stereotypical powerlifting mindset, which is not good at all. You don't have to put on body fat to become a powerlifter, but that's what my mind was telling me. You know, you have much longer rest period. Completely different training style to what I've done my whole life.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, you know what? This sucks. I get nervous on the platform anyway. Screw this. And then I went the complete opposite, did a bodybuilding show, and that's when I turned pro. I'm like,
the universe.
Polar opposite. The worst advice was to tell me I should become a powerlifter.
Mm.
It was a compliment, but like, that's not me.
Yeah. How do you feel about powerlifting, like for women in particular?
I love it for the right person. Mm. Just like bodybuilding, just like tennis, you know, any activity should be, you know, treated with caution because to be good at that sport, you have to go all in and different sports have different requirements. Just like bodybuilding, powerlifting is amazing but very taxing on the mind and body. Yep. It's a great outlet for people, just like bodybuilding. Mm. So use it with caution if you want to go down that path. I think it's fantastic, but again, not for everyone.
Yeah, totally. I noticed like a little bit of a I don't know if it's just me noticing this, but I notice like a little bit of a trend with a lot of women that get into powerlifting and they learn that style of training and they're constantly always reinforced for just adding more weight to the bar and getting stronger. And as you said, like putting on more lean tissue and putting on more size in general, more often than not. And it's not really a sustainable way of training, right? Like you can't always just put more weight on the bar and you can't always just get stronger. You can always strength train, but in terms of like going through proper hypertrophy blocks and other things, like I would say that's probably smart programming in general. But I know in the powerlifting, like a lot of the communities, it is always about just being reinforced for being the strongest in the room rather than like going through different cycles and things like that. And yeah, I've just noticed like a lot of clients that come to us from powerlifting, they're like, I just want to like learn how to, you know, just train for like growth and enjoyment and just fall back in love with training again rather than feeling like, you know, I've always got to be pushing to my max. And, you know, they come in carrying a lot of like injuries and those sort of things. And I just noticed that. I'm like, oh, it's just interesting. It's just something I hadn't, because I've never been in the powerlifting circle. I've always been bodybuilding or hypertrophy or conditioning. I've always been in that realm. Like strength training is obviously a part of all of that, don't get me wrong, but it's not the main and only focus. Like you're not out there just doing singles, you know, that's really not what we do.
I understand what you're saying. The best powerlifters and the ones that take it super seriously do have they taper in. So you push hard for that date, just like a bodybuilding show. You push hard for your max lifts and then you might have a whole week or two off training, let your body recover. You might not touch compounds after. So you've obviously seen it done quite poorly.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of training across the whole spectrum is done very poorly. But under the guidance of a right coach, it is very safe for the body. Like it's a pretty cool thing. And I do take my hat off to the powerlifters that do it well, because you got to, again, tap into a specific mindset that just gets you moving crazy amounts of weight on the day.
Yep.
But then recovery is a big part of it. It can be done poorly, but when done correctly, there is specific ways in which you program and then have your accessories. And we work with a lot of powerlifters as well to prevent injuries and things. So yeah, I can understand that you've probably seen it done poorly, but there are a lot of people who do it well.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's just rare. I wasn't sure because I was like, oh, I only see the aftermath. And like you said, like anything is poor coaching, poor training styles, poor bodybuilding preps, poor anything.
But they wouldn't be coming to you if they were still happy, you know, and if they weren't hurting themselves and if they didn't have a shit coach, you know, they wouldn't be reaching out to you. They'd still be doing what they're doing. It's good interesting
point.
Though.
Good point.
Yeah, but not for me.
No. Moving on. Coaching advice now. So I thought as coaches, obviously, even from like a business perspective, like getting into the online coaching realm, it's a very – and even like personal training, right, for personal trainers, like anyone in the fitness industry, everyone wants to give you their advice. Oh, like even if they've been – like whether they're in the industry, they've been in the industry, they go to the gym, like anyone wants to give you their advice, which I love, because you've got to take what's relevant, leave what's not. But I've been given some doozies and I'm sure you have, and you just smile and thank people. And as I mentioned, it's all about who's giving the advice. But one of the – big pieces of advice when I was literally transitioning from nursing to the fitness industry is so many people in the fitness industry told me, oh, it's already quite saturated. Like it's already quite a saturated. Like pretty much like you add it, you can't add anything different or new or any value.
Nope, it's been done.
You know, like that whole concept of like, you know, like, oh, aren't you worried? Because it's like there's a lot of people in the industry. I'm thinking there's a lot of nurses in the world too. Like it's a lot of anything. Like no one is ever reinventing the wheel, really. Like no one's making another Spotify anytime soon. Like those things aren't coming out of nowhere, especially when you're in your service. Like there's no new service, but yeah, the industry's already too saturated is a piece of advice that I got a lot of. And I think it's more like, I think it's given a lot in the online space because I can understand that there is a lot of online coaching, but like it's so different. Like who you are, what you do, your branding, like everything about you is so unique and different. And sure, there's a lot of people that just copy each other, but like they're not your competitors. Do you know what I mean? Like let them do that. That's great for you actually if most people just like follow along and do the stock standard normal. But to me, like there was a lot of advice when I was transitioning careers, and if I'd listened to any of it, honestly, it would have been the worst thing I could have ever done. Like so much of it. Everything that I almost did was told against me, to be honest.
Far out.
Even the name of the women's health movement. Someone was like, oh, I don't know if I'd go with
that. What was the rebuttals against that?
Oh, this is the rebuttal to it. Oh, yeah, I love that. They said to me when I told them, because I had this name in the back of my mind for like years before I even started it. Mm. And the rebuttal was like, it just sounds a bit big.
What do you mean?
Like big. Sounds like a movement, you know? And I was like,
as in you
is.
Weren't capable to make it.
Like, yeah, I'm like, fucking is a big movement.
Oh, I'm dying. I guess know a who lot that of people, person though, was.
I guess a lot of people, they would do like such and such fitness or like such and such, you know, it's very much centered. But I was always intentional with the direction and the path I've taken. I was like, this is never once just about me. This is not just about training. You know, this is not just about fitness. You know, this is supposed to be bigger and I want evolution for the brand as I grow, you know, and I want direction and I want to be about education and I want it to be a movement. I don't want it to have parameters like or boundaries or walls of what I have to be restrained by name. So that was very intentional. But lots of things, like I don't know whether you've had any similar experiences, but whenever you're creating something new for the first time and whenever you have a vision, like the definition almost of a vision is outside of other people's reality of what they think is possible. So you have to have big thinking. And big thinking and almost things that are a little bit like weird at times, they're the best ideas because no one's had them.
Yes.
You know, like you're literally creating your own path. So people are like, oh, that's different. Mm. And you're like, good. That means there's opportunity, right? Because that's how you actually break a saturated industry, is you bring something different or unique.
Yes, 100%. And I think a saturated industry is a good thing because the attention is on that industry. You need clients, you know, we're never in a shortage of clients in a saturated industry. If we were so, so, so niche that, you know, 1 in 1,000 people can only benefit from our services, or even more, 1 in 10,000, then it's not really a good business model. So I feel like you actually want to lean into the saturated industries, bring your unique flair, and then stay in that zone, because the more saturated, the more people need your help. Mm. So you do hear that a lot, but then I think a saturated industry is a really good thing.
Yeah, like show me one that isn't. Do you know what I mean?
But like, there are, but then they're like a ghost town because not many people need the service.
It's saturated for a reason.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Because like, it's important and beneficial. And
there's lots of it, but yeah, that was the one that came up to me because it wasn't just once, to be honest. And I think people still take it. Like people still give that advice of like, oh, it's quite saturated. Like that's what I hear a lot of. And it's like, of course it is. There's opportunity everywhere. You've just got to find the white pockets and the silent corners. That's what you've got to do. Like you can't bring in and bring something that's done for everyone. Like you have to niche down and you have to, you know, create a brand and you have to have personality and you have to be willing to work for it, right? Like, so yeah, that one for me is just like, I remember hearing that and being like, weird advice to me.
Weird advice. Even like saying that the name was too big.
Yeah.
Like that's so odd because companies, even, you know, Apple, it's not Steve Jobs' phone. It's like Apple. Like it's a company. Yeah, so that's so bizarre. When you think of
names like Apple and like names are weird.
It's not Steve-O's phone.
No, Steve-O.
Steve-O's phones. Like that's just odd.
But when you think about Apple, right? It's not even an iPhone anymore. It's like, think it's like the opportunity. There's no walls on Apple of what they could do. They'll make rockets one day. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like
God.
They, who knows? Do you know what I mean? That's almost what you want, like what you want for yourself. You know, maybe not everyone, but like if you've got that vision, like it should feel like endless. There shouldn't be walls. Think of like Disney, you know, it should feel quite like you're uncertain about it almost, but then it's also got clarity. It's a weird feeling. When
that's
you've
what
got
we
that.
Love. Yeah. As visionaries and leaders, that's what we lean into and is exciting. But my advice was interesting. I'll say as a therapist instead of a coach, but like I remember sitting in uni, I think it was second year uni, in a lecture, and then the lecturer pops down the front, puts her slideshow on and goes, oh, by the way, most of you won't last, you know, 2 years after this. And I'm like, why am
I'm
I
so
here?
Inspired.
I'm like, this is the worst advice we've ever heard. Like, how demotivating is that? And it is just stuck in my head. But I'm kind of glad it happened in a sense because the advice was so bad that it allowed me to realize to not take everything, you know, to take the whole degree with a grain of salt. I was going to pick parts that I wanted and I enjoyed and then not even listen to the rest. I was just going to rock up to the classes I wanted to and skip the ones that I didn't want to go to. And I think that's what allowed me now to think outside the box as an osteopath who hasn't touched a patient in, you know, 3-4 years. It's all exercise rehab work. That was really disheartening for everyone to hear. I mean, she's probably not wrong. And it's not because the industry's saturated or things like that. A lot of people need help with their body, whether, you know, coaches, therapists, whatever. But just the resources to allow us to think outside the box and be visionaries and find the missing pieces in our services, you know, it's very limited.
Mm.
So for some reason they want to tell everyone how hard it is and how hard it's going to be, thinking that that's good advice, but it's horrible.
Mm.
We should be taught, okay, cool, how do you find your ideal client? How do you find your ideal service? You know, how do you keep your hands and joints, you know, safe after doing so much hands-on work? It was just a lot of that was missing, but that one really stood with me.
Why do you think that, like, whether it's true or not, why do you think that they even told you that though?
Maybe it is true.
Oh, well, probably is. It's
a lot of therapists don't last long,
yeah.
But then the delivery of that information was not good because it was just like problem, no solution. Okay, now you have to learn this lecture now. And I'm like,
yeah. And was
you
that
just
the start of your
us.
Degree too?
I think it was like around second year.
Could have told me year one.
Literally, but like just the delivery of that was horrible. And it sort of, just with any degree, a lot of people don't make it to the end.
Yeah.
That's fine. We change our path along the way, but there's a big loophole in that. And it definitely shouldn't have been delivered in that way, I find. It was just like, what the hell?
Yeah, I feel like the same with, it's probably very similar in a lot of degrees, do you know what I mean? Like it's even business, it's like 9 out of 10 fail in the first year. Like I don't know what it would be for nursing or whatever, but I remember in my first year I started with about 500 in my degree in my first year, and I reckon there was only about less than 100 of us that graduated. I think that's pretty, I would be shocked if that wasn't standard, to be honest, because I think that unis are almost like businesses these days.
They are, man.
They just want to get people in, and you know, they want people to almost like repeat. And you know, uni, even though we have HEX and lots of other things too, it still operates very much like a business.
Oh yeah.
And also I think I don't know if it's still the case because of, you know, obviously lockdowns and COVID and everything, but when I went to uni, for a lot of people it was very much like a novelty. Like I'm going to live on campus and be a uni student and party and have all that. And 100% that's a big part of like what makes uni for a lot of people. But I also feel like that's died a little bit because of COVID, like really took away a lot of campuses and things like that. And and also brought forward online learning. I did my postgrad online and man, it was like pulling teeth in comparison to sitting in a lecture hall and actually learning. It's my attention span, obviously. But yeah, I feel like it's so different these days, but I also feel like it's not just because of the occupation, it's also just because a lot of people don't make it through uni.
Yeah, 100%. I just would have liked a bit of a follow-up.
100%.
There was no follow-up. If I was delivering
just
that...
Just needs to go home, she does. Yeah, she's had a bad day.
She called it a day. I would have said, hey, most of you won't make it, you know, 2 years after this. You've got a 5-year, you put your whole life towards 5 years. Here's what you can do about it. Today's lecture is going to actually be about life skills and emotional intelligence and all those skills that you need, but... Drop the bombshell straight to the topic and we're like, what the hell?
Yeah. There's a lot of debate at the moment of like around uni. I don't know if you've been seeing it circulate,
really.
But there's a lot of conversation around like, you know, the benefit of uni, the purpose of uni, and then comparing the like salaries of people that have an undergraduate degree or more versus people that don't, and put that time towards building skills, working for other people, getting experience. And it's so interesting because our generation was very much raised that you finish school, you go and get a degree, or you go and get educated, you do further study, usually move away from home, you get experience and you work. That was very much the trajectory of what sort of happened, whereas now there's more opportunity, like there's more choices for people, and that's also shifting a lot. And as I was saying, there's also like a little bit of controversy now about people that are highly educated earning less than a lot of people that just went into workforces and got jobs and climbed the ladder.
Exactly.
I just think it comes back down to what we were speaking to at the start, you know, it's sort of like it's education and that sort of formal way of doing things isn't the only way, unless you have to get a degree to do something. It's very different. Like obviously therapists and nurses and
well
doctors.
Nurses as well, yeah.
Yeah, but even now they're starting to look at taking people back into hospital training.
Okay.
Rather than having to go through formal stuff, which I think is a fab idea. They used to do it, you know, on the hospital floor. Like you learn fucking nothing in a lecture hall. Tell
exactly.
me how to do CPR in this mannequin that tells me where to put my hands.
I know.
You know, like I don't know. So I think it's so interesting because I think times are changing. I'm here
That's
for it
good.
Too.
I mean, we'll still need, like, I wouldn't be an osteopath without uni, without that title. Mm. But as you just mentioned, like, if there can be a little bit more practicality and a more practical aspect in order to get that. So I still think there needs to be a series of tests that you undergo before you get deemed, with your credentials, competent for that title. Does everyone need to go to uni? No. Do some people need to go to uni for their career path? Yes. I think what was different about me and I suppose we had different experiences, so I'll just speak for myself, but from that topic that came up of you probably won't make it, you know, past this 2 to 5 years, I started working while studying. Started my online coaching while studying and had both,
smart.
You know, the practical element with, okay, I'm learning stuff in this course. And that has what has allowed me to stand so far away from the traditional osteopath that comes out of uni, because I kind of didn't take it completely seriously. Like I did, but I was a rebel in a sense. I still studied and did all that, but if I didn't want to turn up, I wouldn't, because I'd rather have online clients.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And real life clients as well. So that's,
even though there's no such thing as like wasted experience, everything's transferable. Like everything always leads you to where you are though.
Yes.
Could you be doing what you're doing now without your uni degree?
No way.
You don't reckon?
I'm a doctor of osteopathy. Like I help people with injuries and rehab based off 8 years of uni, but lots of practical experience. Yep. I would just be a glorified personal trainer.
Yep.
And I wouldn't have the credentials and the knowledge to back myself up to be confident to deal with really severe health conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just wouldn't be, I could get sued, you know, like if I was giving the advice to be without qualifications, you know, you can get sued and go to court and I know what you're saying by that, but there's no way. It's like, I suppose I could ask, would you be a nurse without going to uni? Imagine if you just rocked up to a hospital and go, okay, I'm delivering your baby today.
Yeah.
Who are you?
No, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, I don't know, like, starting your own business and, you know, like, going down the path that you are, like, you'll never get to the same spot without your experiences ever. But something I always get curious about is, like, if you'd spent those 8 years doing something else to get to a similar spot, would it be different? Like, I don't know what the answer is, and you never actually know. But I just think a lot of people do study, but I always wonder. Like, I always wonder what the alternative would be. Would it lead you to a similar spot? I say this as
I know what you mean.
Yeah, like one example that might be relevant is, like, I remember when Luke went back to uni and did his master's in, like, leadership and something else. He wanted to become a principal. But there was no – like, that wasn't, like, mandatory. There's no qualification to be a principal. It's like you do extra things because it looks better on your CV and you get more experience and all that sort of stuff, right? And it was, like, a $40,000, you know, master's degree or something. Like I said, they're businesses. I look at it now and he's like, no, like, it's helped me do this and this in the business and I've learned all these skills, which I totally get it. But then I look at some degrees like that that's not nursing or, like, you know, being a dentist or whatever it is where you need that piece of paper to do the job.
Yep.
And I wonder, because there's a lot of degrees out there like that, right, where they don't actually give you anything. You've still got to create your own opportunity on the other side of it. And I just wonder that 4 to 5 years of spending doing that thing, could that in this day and age be better spent doing something else?
Yeah, good question. I don't think it's relatable to myself or people in healthcare.
Yeah.
But relatable to someone who does a business degree or a marketing degree, because you know, uni is still a quicker way just to get condensed information. It saves you exploring and going out. But you can do your own marketing degree not by going to uni. You know, you read your own books, you learn about all of that, you get out there and market for a company. I think you can definitely get the knowledge and the skills without a degree. But I would tread carefully when it's got to do with healthcare and people's well-being. But if it's another degree, again, not to take away from that person, it will probably take a lot longer in a sense if you were solely relying on reading and books and all of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can also fast track it by just getting out there and working.
Yeah. Anything where you need probably like a registration, I'd say.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's probably, you can't get that from a cereal box.
Yeah, no, I would definitely not be where I am today without uni, but I would have gone down the personal training mark, but I wouldn't have been able to do what I do now.
Yep.
No way. Same with you as nursing, you just can't.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The legal reasons as well as the knowledge.
That's fair.
Good question though, interesting. Very good. Shall we move on to the next one?
We shall. Where are we up to? Oh, did we just do business?
Well, kind of business advice, career. I just had one more on that in a sense, like we were taught to just always rebook patients.
Yep.
I'm not talking from a personal training point of view. All of my poor advice has actually been from studying, which is ironic. So just because I'm kind of like, so always rebooking patients and having that reliance business model did not sit well with me at all. Again, I tried it, but there's just no better feeling, as you know, than giving someone the tools to feel like they can do it on their own. And that was a big part of going from hands-on to exercise rehab based. Time and a place for hands-on work. It feels great. It works short term, but I'd rather not have the same person on my treatment table for 10 years. You know, probably get sick of each other as well. That reliance rebooking model, absolutely trash information.
Yep. The only other thing I had down for like business and career, I literally put down nursing, and I was trying to think, I was like, I don't think there was any bad advice given to me.
Okay.
In that, like, I'm sure there was on like a micro level, but in terms of career, I don't think so. Like I think, you know, when, like, I think some of the best advice and skills, like I learned so much perspective, patience, work ethic. Like I learned so much from that, from those years. Like there was not bad advice. There was definitely like bad mentoring and a lot of things that the system taught me through bad experiences, like that 100%. But in terms of like a lot of people that gave me advice, or a lot of like my mentors, or, you know, like your bosses and managers, like they're the people that you always look back on fondly, you know. And I think that's important for a lot of people to realize, like if you have staff, like you have such a big like imprint on someone's life, because you always remember the really good managers, don't you? Like you remember your really good mentors, your really good bosses, really good managers, and how much they actually like shaped your career and who you are. So yeah, I honestly couldn't say anything bad, because I just feel like I learned so much from the system and how sometimes fucked up it is. But then also the people in the system, because usually healthcare is full of a lot of selfless people, to be honest.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Beautiful. Relationships and family planning. Woo-hoo. You're 30 now, babe. That's a big milestone apparently in this world.
I know.
Where are your 5 kids?
I honestly thought that by the time I was 30, I'd have 3 kids by now.
Yeah, didn't we all?
That was the what happened? Fuck. I don't know. I have a thought. Can I share it? Because I was talking about this on the weekend to some of my uni friends. I feel like people that went to uni, or that people that moved away, there was like this 4 to 5 year gap where it paused our biological clock, because we were studying, we were partying, we were having fun, doing all those sort of things.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of my friends at home that didn't go to uni, like they moved into that stage of their life, right?
You're right.
Whereas I look at me and the 2 other friends out of my group of like 30, we're the ones that moved away, and, you know, even though I've been with Luke for like 10 years, but we were the ones that like went to uni and moved away and did other things first before starting to settle down. Whereas a lot of my friends are like, some of my friends are having their 3rd kid, like wild. They started families quite young, because whether it was they could progress in their career a lot quicker, so they were more financially secure early on, and that was logic to them, or they could buy houses like in a small regional place, a lot more affordable. Like I just feel like if you move away and you go to uni and you have this like gap, and I guess it's the same for a lot of people that maybe go into travel, you know, and they have this like, it's not a gap, but I just feel like in terms of the clock of the status quo, I feel like it just extends it. So I'm like, I'm 30, but I'm really like 25.
Literally.
I don't know if you feel the same.
Absolutely. Well, I'm 32 in August, and I've definitely, you do think by 30, I'm going to have this house, I'm going to have these kids, but it's like, I just could not think of anything that would screw me up more right now than, you know, buying a house and getting married and having kids right now, because it would just take away so much from everything that I'm building career-wise and just enjoying life with Paul. And we want to get married, we want to have kids, and, you know, obviously, and it's a Greek stereotype, you know, you cop it all the time, when are you going to get married, when are you going to have kids, blah. I've been hearing that since I was 20, you know, from my grandma, bless her. But like, I just couldn't think of anything worse, because in this day and age, weddings cost a lot of money. I'd rather put that $100,000+ into business, or even a holiday or anything else, rather than having that. And I notice my more career-driven friends, some even don't want kids at all, and that's fine. I'm not here to tell you what's right or wrong. Just do what you want. But I notice the ones that do, as you said, love travel, have a big career goal or something else they're working towards, don't want kids yet or at all. But then the ones who, you know, they're happy with their career or they might not be working, that's fine. Stay-at-home parents, that's their job in itself.
Yeah.
My hat goes off to people doing both. I just think that advice just stresses Paul and I out at the moment because, you know, we're doing so much, like a lot. And I just wish that could be a little bit more recognised rather than, oh, but you're not married, you don't have kids. But that's just traditional values creeping in. Obviously, we cop it a lot from family.
Yeah, I know.
And that's out of love because they just, they love you guys together and they love us together and they want to see that next phase and all that. But it's like, that would just throw us so far back right now.
Yeah, everyone's on their own timeline, you know. And I think so much has changed in this day and age. This is unfortunate that our biological clock doesn't at the same time.
Look, it's in the back of my mind.
You know, that's the only thing. It's sort of like evolution doesn't wait, doesn't care, to be honest. But I completely agree. Like, both Luke and I, obviously Luke's a couple of years older than me, so I'm definitely the younger one, but I've always been like, no, I'm still young. But now when you turn 30, it does put that like pressure on you and more people start asking as well. But you've always got to just go off your own clock, you know. And something that a friend told me that I'll never, because she had kids when she was like, I think she was 22 when she had her first one or something like that, like quite young. She was like, you know, you never feel ready. Like she's got three now. She's like, so a lot of the time you wait until you feel like you're ready, but like no one tells you, but you never feel ready. Mm-hmm. Even when you've got kids, you're like, fuck, how am I mom? That's weird as shit, you know? Like she's like, you always feel young at heart. And I was like, wow, that shook me because I was like, so interesting. You know, I think we all have this stereotype of like, what it feels like of like being a mum, and sometimes, you know, your own parents seem like they've got everything together, but it's like, no, this is the first time for them too. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like it's the first experience. And yeah, I think everyone, there's no right or wrong. Like I think, God, everyone's just so happy to give their opinion on anything, but it's such a personal topic and question. It's something I just never ask people because you just don't even know who can't have kids.
Exactly. You know, like stop saying that to me because some people are actually really struggling to fall pregnant.
Or they've had 9 miscarriages.
Exactly. I just think it's something obviously.
Or they're going through
families.
IVF.
Yeah. You just shouldn't comment on strangers that you don't know that well because they could be going through that, or maybe they aren't happy in their relationship and are actually about to break up. Like leave people alone.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, leave me alone. No. Last one.
So finances, money and investing. This is something like, this is 100% not my forte. Oh, why am I looking at your notes? That's what I was like, that doesn't look like my
Read my notes, babes. It's good advice.
Yeah, the only one that I wanted to flag for this, because like I love business. I love my business. I love the work that I do. I love investing in my own things, but it's not something that makes me tick, to be honest. Like Luke loves real estate. That's his thing. I just could not care, to be honest. Like have a home. That's it. Live in it. That's nice. I just don't care about the other stuff. But I think this is like the worst, but then also the best piece of advice that I've been given for investing is invest in what you know, right? Like invest in what you know. So if you know crypto, if you know real estate, if you know these things, then invest in it because you've got certainty, you've got clarity, you know how to move things around and make things work. Where people go wrong is they invest in what they don't know. So they don't understand cryptocurrency or they don't understand real estate. They don't understand those things and they throw a lot of money at it and they wonder why it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? Like investing doesn't work unless you do, right? You got to make smart decisions. So for me, my best investment, 100% hands down, has always been myself and my business. 100%. Like I'll put all my money into my business because I know I'll make it work before I'll throw it into just the real estate market or shares. Like 100% because I don't understand those other things. Like it's too – and I just spent all my time looking at the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I also think you investing in your own skill set and your knowledge and all those other things, it literally has the potential to like 10x a return if you do something with it, especially if you've got a business that then you capitalize on the skill sets that you've got inside that. It's just hard for people because they can't measure the investment on that. Like it's safer to know, oh yeah, well, real estate goes up 10% each year and this is, you know, blah, blah. It's easy for people to do that. But when you can't see the actual return, or maybe the return takes a very long time and maybe it's not on an annual basis, but a lifetime basis, that's a lot harder for people to see the return on. But that's what I actually feel the most comfortable in throwing money at, is like investing in myself, investing in the business, investing in staff, investing in my quality of life. Like I know the return that that has on everything else around me. And yeah, the other stuff is just not for me. Maybe in the future, but not for me.
Yeah, and that's totally fine. And it is a lot safer long term to invest in your skills and knowledge, because if something happens, to your business or your material items, you still have skills and knowledge to rebuild. Mm. Whereas if you don't have any skills and knowledge and put all of your funds into something that is still outside of your control, then if that goes, you're literally starting from ground zero with nothing to build on. So I really like that piece of advice. You can never go backwards when investing in your skills and knowledge.
Yep.
One of my biggest lessons, and I did mention this on another episode and got really good feedback from people because apparently it helped them, but when you are starting your own business, now, my biggest advice was from my accountant. It was shit advice.
Bless him. I think we both got stung on this, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I hope he doesn't watch the podcast. He doesn't. Was to continue out in the workforce as a sole trader. Mm-hmm. Now, me being me just worked like an absolute crazy person in a sense. I didn't stop working. My business grew like exponentially, all relative, but it grew really well for my first year out being in charge of myself. I was still a sole trader. I wasn't registered as a company. So I was treating patients, you know, had clients, all of that. Went really well for the first year. 49% went to the ATO because I was a sole trader. And that was like...
Was that in a tax bill at the end? You're like,
tax
fuck.
Bill yeah. at the end yeah. because I was a sole trader. No one thought that I would grow so much because apparently the reason why, A, I was uneducated on anything to do with tax, you know. My accountant and I didn't think that the business would grow to that amount so quickly. So we thought we had a bit more room to not worry about registering as a company, a little bit more paperwork to register as a company, which is not a big deal. You need a business name and just a few other legal requirements that totally would have cost about $1,000.
Yep.
And then, yeah, so that was one of my biggest mistakes. So now when I have like our staff at the gym and all of that, whether they're just starting or established, I check with all of them. Are you registered as a company? Yes
don't,
or no?
Don't
if not,
me.
Call this person, change it right now because 49% is going to the tax office and it will hurt.
Yeah, we got stung with that too. I think we both did at the same time.
We didn't know.
Yeah, I think as well it's the online business space. A lot of accounting is sort of not the same. Even like you probably, I don't know, like the way you register the work that you do in an online space is so back to front because there's not really categories to categorize.
I just put it all under osteopathy, which is good. Well, but for an online coach,
so different.
Different. Yep. But that was shocking. And then another one was not to rent ever. I don't know if that's, again, I'm going to use Greek stereotypes because they're so like opinionated. I pretty much slid out of the womb into the advice to not rent.
Yeah.
Dad was there whispering in my ear, don't rent.
Like
it's
buy.
Dead money. You know,
yes.
things like that. And
that's what
look,
Luke says.
I can understand, but rent, and I'm still renting my property. We own the gym, but renting my houses, you know, more flexibility. You can live in areas that you love. You can try different lifestyles and areas. Look, if I had the funds to buy a house as well as invest in business, I totally would. But it's not as bad as what people think to actually just try new areas. And you can even rent where you want to live and then invest in an area that's going to get great return as well.
Yeah.
So just that advice was not good at all.
Yeah, honestly, like I completely – I never had a qualm with renting either. But Luke is like, no, we're buying. And like, when you're doing that stuff, it's very, like, very one side or the other, isn't it? Like, the real estate, again.
He's passionate about real estate.
Yeah, that's
so
what I mean.
Good.
He gets it, he understands it. Whereas to me, I'm like, you know, and I also think it comes down to the lifestyle you want to live to. Like, when you own a home, it's like, you know, you can't, yeah, you just can't just like throw your money around. Like it's, and I understand like, you know, long-term investment, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. That's fine. But again, like I completely agree with you, like being able to put your money in where you know it should go, then that's where you should put it. Do you know what I mean? Like don't invest in places that you don't care about, that you don't read about. Like Luke sits up and reads about stuff, you know, and I'm like, I just don't care about that. And some people do you know what I mean? The same way that they don't put their money in a business, you know, because they don't care about it or they don't understand it. And I just think if you always invest in what you understand, you can't really go wrong, right?
Yeah. And if you're a business owner or want to grow your business, I wouldn't recommend tying up all your money either just sitting in a bank account where inflation decreases the value of your money that's sitting there anyway.
Diversify.
Because everything's just going to go up in price. So I wouldn't keep it sitting in a bank and I wouldn't put it on a mortgage, because then you've got no wiggle room to play with, to invest in business or other things as well. So people think, oh, the goal is to get a house and then business. I'm like, oh, okay, if you've got the funds, great. But if you can pick one or the other, I would pick business first. Then you'll be able to afford many houses when your business flourishes.
Invest in what you know. Mm. One thing before we finish up, that one piece of advice that my dad gave me that was actually really good for business and money was, got to go in the red to get ahead. I never understood that until I was like, oh, sometimes you've got to like go into debt. You've got to spend more money to make more money. I never understood how you make your money work for you, right? Until I started getting into that. I was like, why would I want to do that? Go in the red to get ahead. That didn't make sense. Just sounds catchy. but sometimes you've got to do that. You know, sometimes you've got to spend way more money that's uncomfortable on yourself, right? Like a lot of people freak out with like the price of coaching or mentoring or education. It's like, you know, like some, like it's actually about like on the opposite side, how much this can make you, right? And any investment that you feel like you're getting a good deal for, it's probably not very good, right? Like no one really ever thinks they're getting a good deal when they buy a house. It always feels expensive. But like 20 years later, that's when you realize you've got the deal. So it's always about like, again, having the knowledge and the insight, but then also not being scared to throw money at things that maybe are immeasurable or invisible in terms of the investment. It's just, it's risk, you know, you got to take risks sometimes.
Yeah. And that stuck with me. You taught me that ages ago through your dad, and I didn't write it down because I'm like, oh, I hope Sherelle will say that. And you did. You got to get in the red to get ahead.
Love it.
Great advice. Sticks with me to this day as well.
Right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. This one was fun, like just to go through some of the different areas and like some of the advice, unsolicited and unrequested more often than not, advice that we've given and some of the lessons that have come from that too. Obviously, there was a lot of, yes, the things that maybe didn't go well, but then also some of the things that on the backhand, like what we did instead and the things that we did to counteract that, or I guess, or just pave our own path, which everyone's going to have their own stories for in each of their different areas as well.
Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and hit follow so you can stay up to date with our podcast every week.